Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.
It was the most recent and probably one of the largest environmental circumstances that brought us to our knees. Mm-hmm. And in bringing us to our knees, probably the biggest and most raw and real sense of, God, are you who you say you are? All right, welcome back to the Living Wholehearted podcast. Today we are talking about something that is precious and rare, actually, and worth protecting. It's called trust. And it is something, as you like to say, it is really easy to lose, and it's really hard to develop trust. So let's talk a little bit about that today. You know, when we think about trust, what comes to mind for you first?
I think about all the times that it can be broken. I think about how desperately I want that with my girls, my teenage girls, that they would trust me. I think about all the trust tests that we've had in our walk with God and the trials over the years. I think about how we've grown that between us over the years in marriage and how intentional it has to be, how we're trying to build trust with our staff and our leader teams. Okay, that's what I think
it takes about. Effort. I mean, if, even right there, I'm already beginning to feel a little exhausted. Yeah. But I mean, as listeners, you know, you're thinking about all these roles that we just mentioned for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just started to feel that too. It's like, wow, this really doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. And it's something that trust is developed with consistency over time. Think about that for a little bit. We give trust. I know I was guilty of this earlier in my story for sure. I would give trust implicitly to people that didn't do anything to deserve it. And sometimes it came back to bite me. And I gave it too quickly. I didn't honor the fact that trust is a process. It's something that is earned with consistency over time, both from other people that are seeking my trust, but also for me, wanting to extend and build trust with others.
So let's just make sure that's really clear, because what you said there was a platform of words that a lot of people don't even know. So trust takes time and consistency to build. So it takes over time. And you said sometimes I would give my trust too quickly. I think a majority of people give their trust too quickly, unless they've been hurt a lot and then they're really guarded. And so in the church particularly, I think we're taught to give our trust quickly based on position, based on experience of, like, if you want to be loving like Jesus, well, then you trust, right? It gets confusing for us.
Everyone's a good person. I mean, there's some.
Or give people a chance.
There's some good things about having appropriate, healthy levels of trust. But in terms of giving access to your personhood or to more, I mean, that's very, you want to have wisdom. Yeah. And I think that that's what, you and I are, and Living Wholehearted, we're advocates for wisdom as it relates to developing trust and the appropriate relationships with people. Leaders and followers, power dynamics are so important. All of this stuff plays into this.
Okay. So trust takes time. Let's talk about how you build trust. And let's break it down into the elementary level as if we're teaching our kids. All right. I think that's always really helpful when we're trying to teach or learn this as adults, is kind of going, okay, so how would I explain this to a little fifth grader? And then if you have a fifth grader, you can actually apply it there. Okay. So let's talk about new people. like our little fifth grade girl, we don't have a fifth grader anymore. They're now high teenagers, but they have, these are the conversations they have had over and over with us over the years, specifically through Courageous Girls, but even in the day to day as we walk through. So new people in their life, maybe we're going to a gathering, we hardly know anybody. What are some of the conversations we might have with them at a fifth grade level?
Okay. Well, we would say, you know, make sure you look people in the eyes, even if you don't know them. And if we're being introduced, that's kind of important. That helps build confidence and is important to show respect. That's great. And as a fifth grade reading, at a fifth grade level, you've got words as well. So you might, you know, we would talk about manners and the importance of that. There's actually a cool science behind manners. Manners actually, adults don't listen to kids that don't use manners. So we wanted our girls, and it's really, really good to have them make eye contact and have manners. They're more likely to be heard by adults, which is a good thing for when adult dynamics can get kind of funky with kids, right? Mm-hmm. So those are two things that come to my mind.
Okay. I love that. I love the eye contact because, again, someone who might want to take advantage of trust is looking for someone who's maybe really vulnerable and impressionable and is going to kind of go with whatever you say or want. So somebody that is safe is going to be able to honor in the back of going, okay, this little one or this person is able to look me in the eye. And at the end of the day, when I think worst case scenario, sorry, I go there as a mom, but I'm going, I can also identify you in a lineup in the police report, like when you're looking somebody in the eye. So that's worst case scenario. But in general,
it's good to be prepared.
Being able to see, look people in the eye versus the head down and the slumped shoulders, what does that communicate? That communicates, I don't think highly of myself. I'm very cautious, possibly could be introverted, but I'm showing that I'm not confident, and that can make way for somebody who would take advantage of that. Yeah. So again, the confidence, the manners, love that. I would also just say we are teaching our fifth grader to listen to their gut. And so as particularly followers of Christ, sometimes we dismiss emotions or how the body is actually responding. So we're wanting to teach our little fifth graders. So I'm going, listen to how you feel as you introduce yourself to people and you meet people. How do they make you feel? Listen to that. That is discernment. And it's going to help you discern whether this feels like a safe person or somebody that you just want to be cautious with. So learning to listen and practice that skill from a very young age. If you're an adult who's never practiced that, that's a lot what we're doing in our coaching and learning how to discern. I feel uncomfortable. This person that is kind of in my bubble, my space bubble. You know, I'm leaning back and they're coming at me in my space versus reading the social cues that I'm comfortable with this much distance.
Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball your way because I can just hear it now. There'll be some people that have just heard this verse before or had someone else tell them this. In Jeremiah, the heart is deceitful above all things. So why am I supposed to judge? I'm supposed to listen to my feelings, listen to my my body and how I feel. Mm-hmm. When my heart is deceitful, I shouldn't be listening to my feelings. I should listen to something that I can count on. Yeah. What would you say to them?
I love it. That comes at the end of the passage, right, of 17. That's talking about those that trust in the Lord are like a tree planted by the water versus those that trust in man are going to be like a tumbleweed in the desert. And then it says, above all else, the heart is deceitful. It's really talking about motives and recognizing that we are lost without ourselves. We need to trust the Lord to be able to discern where to go and what to do in his ways. So in context, that scripture pulled out of context isn't talking about emotions and feelings and the way the body's responding in a moment. Emotions really show up in our body. And if we start to tune in and pay attention, God says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. And to be able to learn to help to discern all of who we are. So I might think somebody is trustworthy, like they have a certain position. All my friends really like them. Maybe they have a platform and they seem like, wow, gosh, everybody's great. I might even, my heart might be like, oh, I really like this person. But something in my body is feeling a little uncomfortable. And maybe there is something even deeper discerning in my spirit. Like maybe there's something I'm getting a sense from the Holy Spirit of just be careful. Listening to all four of those is really the skill and the development of becoming more wholehearted, living wholehearted.
God made it all anyway, right? He made all of us, our heart, mind, body, soul.
Yeah.
And he gave us the gift of relationship, but trust in those relationships. So we got to listen to, we attune to the things that are inside us in moments, right? That might help inform us. Can we trust this person and, or not? And it might be, you know, we need to be, I think generally it's good for us to have a little bit more of a cautious posture, especially if you're wired to want to just, you know, as a person that's highly relational, and it's easier for you to give of yourself and just trust away, even though there's no history. You know, it's kind of like trust, but verify.
Yeah. Perhaps. I would say as merchants, when we talk about the core values index, you hear us talk about that all the time. If you're with us, throughout our podcast, merchants probably have the highest vulnerability here because we really do believe the best in people and we see the best in people. And so we're kind of the big, like rooting for you, even if all of your behaviors are really messy. We're like, yeah, but your heart is good.
I mean, we need people like that, right? Yeah. So that's good in and of itself. But you're right. They're the most vulnerable to what we're talking about here because of their people orientation.
Yeah. So going back to the little fifth grader entering a room, trying to teach them and give them permission that they get to listen to their own discernment. And if they need help in the moment to get mom, get dad, or help your sister if she's there, or whoever's the safe, a trusted adult in the room, making sure that you just check in if there's something that's uncomfortable, which is not going to happen in majority of situations. But what we're trying to train and to learn is that you just don't trust someone just because somebody said you should trust them. You don't trust someone just because they have a title. You don't trust someone just because they're older than you and have more power in the room. And you don't trust one just because they say they follow Jesus. Trust is earned. Trust takes time. And you're usually going to tell if their behaviors match their words. And so you can only do that over time. So in the room, giving our girls, particularly if we're thinking fifth grader, a chance to be able to have a little power in to say, you don't have to go up and hug everybody in the room if you're uncomfortable with hugging. But to have stand tall, use your words, manners, love that. Okay, what else are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, are we staying with the fifth grade girl?
Do you feel like we're done?
I don't know. I mean, where were you going with that?
I don't know. I was just using it as an example sometimes to say how quickly we rush into situations and think everybody in this room is trustworthy when we actually would say start with slow and steady and then be able to be discerning to go, these are people that we can trust.
And I think I remember you saying, hey, when we're thinking about trust as adults, even sometimes it's good to go back to when we were kids or when we were little. So that's where you were going.
But you can take it further if you'd rather to move on.
Yeah. Moving away from the fifth grader, right? As we think about the principles of trust, I mean, I think trust is something that it's like a sacred currency. I would love to see, we always talk about how we would love to see empathy, like just explode. Like the world needs a lot more empathy. The world needs a lot more trust even before you could really experience empathy with people, I think, on a deep, deep level. So it is so worth it. And it does take time. So I find it personally challenging to try to be a person that could be trustworthy.
Okay, that's good.
And I think, you know, in our male-female dynamics, a lot of times when we're co-presenting, people love that because they get both that male-female dynamic. Also in our friendship or peer groups or where we may be, there's value in us being who we are. And one of the things that, you know, I think as an example of trying to grow in my ability to be a trustworthy person for other females is modeling that or being that with you in front of them and also with them. And so I think that's something as a guy, that's one thing I think of a lot. Okay. How can I be a safe person as a guy to other gals that maybe didn't have safe guys in their lives? That's one little tangent I'm taking, but that is an application that means a lot to me.
I think we can flip the role too. I think that's an excellent application. I think we can flip the role even for being a female that's safe for men.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of systems that teach like, well, because the scriptures say, like, beware, she's a temptress, like, run. And yet, not every woman is actually wanting to cross any sort of sexuality boundary. For sure. And so learning to be safe for women, to be able, the way we dress, the way we hold ourselves, the way we ask questions about a man's wife, being willing to not cross emotional boundaries, going too deep emotionally, especially if we are entering into somebody else's relationship. So trust not only as female in work systems, but also as husband and wife, to be able to practice like being a safe person. I love that, because it's not always about the other people. It's like, am I a trustworthy person? Am I somebody that is doing what I say that I want to do? Perfectly? No. But if I mess up, can I ask forgiveness?
Ooh, that prompts me with another thought. I mean, trust is written all throughout the scriptures, trusting God and trusting others. But this aspect of introspection, am I a trustworthy person? Yeah. I think another aspect of this is even holding a confidence with people. So being a kind of person, and this is something to try to practice too, when someone shares something with you that is of substance or of depth, being a person that'd be like, is this something that you would like me to hold with you? Or is this something I could share even with my wife? I did this just the other day with a client who was sharing some things that were going to be confidential, but I did ask if I could share with you because of your clinical wisdom on some things, and we haven't talked about it yet, but it's just the idea of being a kind of a safe and non-anxious presence, but a safe person who can build trust by holding a confidence where that's appropriate, right? We're not talking about secrets of that are unhealthy. Mm-hmm. We're talking about being a confidence where we can hold things that others need to have someone help hold for them.
Yeah.
That would be a healthy way. Speak maybe to that a little bit. I just know that that dynamic is an important one as it relates to having trust in relationships.
Well, I think let's just start with the marriage relationship. I know that this happens a lot for couples, is they'll have some vulnerable conversations, or they'll or maybe it's not vulnerable conversations, it's just inside information about each other, because you know each other's families and you know each other's quirks and you know the funny things you say on the side. And so being someone who just tells those stories in public and doesn't really honor the fact that your spouse did not feel comfortable about that. So asking permission, which is what you were modeling there with that woman saying, do I have permission to share with so-and-so? Even if you're in a work environment, saying, do I have permission to share and bring someone else along so we can work on this together? It's a permission question. The same would be between a husband and wife. Do I have permission to use that example in our small group on Sunday? Like, it's a great one. Man. I love being able to share bad about you.
Yeah. I think early in our marriage, I may have just told some stories, because I like telling some stories that might
you're a great storyteller.
That might have crossed those lines, and you and I had to discuss these boundaries that protecting these little things that are just for us.
Yeah. And I want to be careful, because you said it's not about secrets and keeping family secrets. It's about first having the conversation behind closed doors about what are we comfortable talking about each other?
Yeah.
What feels sacred? Now, even based on wiring, introvert, extrovert, right? The extroverts often will say something like, as part of being funny or sharing an example, and their introverted spouse is like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe you just talked about that in front public. So this is about trust. It's not about whether extrovert or introvert is better or not. It's more about, can we trust that we can hold each other as valuable, and what we share
protect each other
is sacred.
Yeah.
And then there might be really purposeful things. So even like if you're working through recovery work, right, whether that's betrayal work or addiction work, or maybe your kid's going through something really hard and you're going through something as a couple, asking permission, can I share this with my accountability brothers, because so they can be praying for us, or wives, can I share this with my Bible study group so they can be praying for us? Asking permission is part of building foundations of trust. I think God does this with us. How do you see God ask permission in the scriptures?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jesus said it himself, I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone lets me in, I come and have fellowship with them. He stands at the door, knocks. And I remember this old painting. It's not really an accurate painting as it relates to the ethnicity of Jesus, because it was a white Jesus. But this old painting that my grandparents used to have, it was pretty popular, of a Jesus standing outside a door to knock. And the artist, I will say, did a beautiful job with this detail. And it took me, I didn't even know about it until someone had shared with me. He said, yeah, you know about that painting? You know that you look at the door, there's no doorknob on the outside of the door. Mm. It's the person on the inside that has to open that door for Jesus. And that was the beautiful integration of that kind of art with that truth. Jesus doesn't violate our person. He is a good shepherd, and he is the one that knows what we need. and builds trust with us in our relationship with him with consistency over time. Mm. And you just see it throughout the scriptures, the arc of scripture, Old Testament and New Testament all reveal this character and nature of our awesome God. Part of his character is judgment. Well, he is the perfect judge after all, not us, but, and sure, he addressed certain, religious leaders really poignantly and directly and with harsh words, but he didn't do it out of anger in an unrighteous anger. And he didn't sin in doing that. Most of how he approached people and how he communicated was with gentleness and careful instruction.
Most of the time,
yeah.
Unless there was needing for some correction.
And
it usually was the religious righteous, right? Who's mm-hmm. thinking, I don't need God and I don't need others. I got this figured out. And so I love that because it reminds me just even of other places where God gives choice. Mm. So it is also another way of building trust with people is not always deciding for them, but giving choice. So in Deuteronomy, he says, you choose life or you choose death. He actually lets us choose whether we follow Jesus or not, which feels really hard for a lot of people. Why would he do that? Why wouldn't he make it so everybody just follows him? And I go, because at the end of the day, healthy relationship is built on trust, and trust comes out of choice, choosing to choose life, to mm-hmm. to choose what is right. And again, as human beings, when we mess up, we can make it right with one another. It's what we do after what we did that matters most. But that idea of being able to have a God who knocks at the door, waits, mm-hmm. is very patient with us. Yeah. And then also gives us choices. And then when we choose other than what he would like us to choose, he doesn't leave us or just kind of walk out. He kind of lets the process happen. And so
like a perfect parent.
A great parent. Yeah. And then he's there when we're ready to come back. And so this is that idea of really being able to be a trusted person. We're going to talk about when trust is broken, but just thinking about the best of things right now. Mm-hmm. Do you do what you say you're going to do? And so I would say you confess when you used to do in our early marriage. And I actually would really not, I'm extending this because it's hard to confess on my podcast.
Wait for it.
There were times where I wouldn't do what I say I was going to do. And I really justified it because the person in front of me needed more than what Jeff needed. So the example would be just coming home. You know, I'd say I'd be home by 10 and then I'd be home by 12. And is Jeff my dad? No. But that isn't very respectful. And I'd come home late because I would get in deep conversation or I was helping or I was praying over someone. I mean, like,
I remember these days. This is a long time ago.
Right. Yeah. And just recognizing, or like, I'll be home after church by 1 and then it ends up being 2:30. So the idea of doing what we say we're going to do and communicating if the plan changes is something that we're teaching in corporate America. We're teaching in churches. We're teaching with our parenting. We're teaching in marriage, is saying, be thoughtful about what you say and then actually match your words. Yeah. And if you can't, then you come back. So if all of a sudden I'm like, shoot, I'm not going to be back by 1, then I got to. Great thing about texting is I could just text Jeff and just say, hey, shift in plan. It's going to be closer to 2:30, vice versa. You do an excellent job about that. And I learned from you how helpful that was and what that felt like on the other side, because it does build trust.
Yeah.
You start to go, okay, Jeff means what he says.
And freedom.
If he says he's going to mail these at the mail post office today, I know it's going to happen. If he handed me the mail, might have happened because a lot of life happened in between. And now I'm more thoughtful. I'm like, you know what?
You are.
I said I was going to drop this off. I need to go drop it off because I want to stay trustworthy.
Give me some.
Thank you.
You are. Yes. Yes. I'm thinking about trust also from a biblical lens for a moment. And this is just something that, you know, the last 3 years now we could basically frame it, about 3 years ago. In a process of a 3-year journey, I should say, we had a real deep dive into trust development and trust broken in some areas of our lives. One of the largest environmental circumstances that brought us to our knees.
Mm-hmm.
And in bringing us to our knees, probably the biggest and most raw and real sense of, God, are you who you say you are? How are you going to help us get through that? And it was over 3 years, so we didn't know, and it didn't happen fast. It was a long and steady, yeah, agonizing process of learning to trust him at a deeper level. Mm. Not that we've arrived, but I definitely know that we trust him more than we did before because of this. It was excruciating at times. But when we look at, it brought me back. I mean, I was a pastor for a long time. I've been a Christian since I was, you know, second grader, and I've know God's word and I love God's word, but here I was learning in a deeper way than I ever had before. Mm-hmm. Like it was like deeper waters. I got, God, are you still God in this way? Can I trust you? Are you going to come through with things like our livelihood, our ability to keep, to pay our bills, our ability to, be in a home that's safe and secure. Are we going to, our business, mm-hmm, all of these things. And I just, in the deep dive of looking into this, it's amazing, to see so many places of just being so hungry to find this in God's word and in relationship with him, seeing the arc of scripture. So much of it is, can be boiled down to, do you trust me or do you trust you? And
Jeremiah 17.
Even in our relationship with God, especially in our relationship with God, everything that we could frame could probably be filtered down to that. Are you going to trust me in my way, in my design, my purpose, who I am? God says, and think about the stories that you know in the scriptures. Isn't this true? Or are you going to trust you? Which do you choose? Mm-hmm. And he does give us the choices because he does it out of love. And he, yeah, knows that that's good for us as his kids. Taking that and trying to take that wisdom, only God deserves that kind of trust, that level of worship, right? Mm-hmm. This is important. And especially in church culture, we create idols when we look at sometimes our pastor and we elevate them to places where we don't want to go to church if he or she's not speaking, you know? My goodness. We could be vulnerable to the same thing that the ancient Israelites were vulnerable to in terms of just idolatry. It's just much more subtle here in the West. So do we trust God? Practically, a phrase that we like to use just about the whole audio, just that our behavior matches what we say, is like this. I don't know who invented it, but whoever said this, is it's great.
Shout out to you, whoever.
Yeah. does the audio match the video? I just think that's a great question as we evaluate in our own hearts and minds, our lives. Mm-hmm. Can we be trustworthy? And if even as we begin to help our kids or ourselves look at others, do we, before we give trust implicitly, we look at other people and does the audio match the video? Well, that takes time, right? To be able to have enough video and audio to observe and to hear and to see if there's a match.
Yeah.
Not perfection, but just
consistency.
So it might
sound like we're speaking from a jaded place, but it's actually wisdom. It's wisdom to go slow. It's wisdom to see what behaviors. And so what our betrayal, I'm going to call it the betrayal 3 years ago, it was just a blindsided, it impacted our entire life, our children, our personal life, our business, our ministry. Our community came around us and just was like, is it Aaron and who that held up Moses' arms?
Yeah.
As he just got tired and weary, you know, and praying.
Couldn't do it anymore.
So we needed friends. And that's the place you get some bone tired of trying to go uphill when trust has been broken with human beings. Mm-hmm. Trust doesn't get broken with God. And so you were reminding me of just the trust muscle analogy, that mm-hmm, trust is a muscle and it has to be nurtured. It has to be built. And then sometimes the weight goes up, and that's what happened. You know, God was like, okay, maybe it was the enemy, maybe it was God, we don't know. But the idea of it's time to learn. God will use anything that comes at us, whether the suffering is because of our sin, whether it's because of the enemy, or whether it is a trial, the three types of suffering that come at us, God will use it to help us grow our trust muscles so that they're stronger and we're able to handle more in that Was it 2 Corinthians 12:9-10 we're in right now with our family, and the idea of it saying, I rejoice, or I'm content, or I take pleasure in hardships and difficulty and insults and persecution, and having a great conversation with our girls about how can we actually take joy or be content in these kinds of difficulties for Christ's sake. And so what you're speaking to is just that sometimes we want to lose trust with God and be like, why did you do this to me? Or why are you letting this happen? When really he's the one that's going to carry us through. He will finish what he started. He does do what he say he's going to do. He just does it slower than we like sometimes.
And he did it for us. And he's done it again and again. And, you know, I wouldn't say that if that wasn't true. He has. And but in that time frame, you know, it just can, sometimes it can feel like, but when? Like, I know this is who you are, but when? And even then, it just became a surrender, you know, and maybe you're listening and you're going through a trial. You're facing insults, you're facing persecution, you're facing hardship, and you're having identification with some of those phrases and some of those feelings that we just articulated from our most recent story. It probably won't be the last, you know. I certainly don't want to anticipate or hope for the next one, the next scenario of betrayal or what have you. But when you mentioned the body, it was awesome, because I was just at the gym the other day, and I'm trying to bear weight that is hard to bear. And the physiology of the reality of this is that when we use muscle and we go hard and heavy and heavier, the muscle breaks down. And then it rebuilds stronger, which is the whole science of physiology in this way. I mean, just knowing that that's happening. And that's so true of our emotional journeys and our journeys with people in lives and in relationships and where trust. So hard is redeemed in good when it allows us to grow and to deepen. And for us, our trust with God was deepened through those experiences relationally that were broken. A lot of other good things have come from that.
So we're kind of talking about three types of trust. We have trust between each other as human beings, trust with God, and then there's trust with ourselves. I do think that that is part of the dynamic of trust building that God has done in us, but also we help children to build. And as leaders, we want to help other people to trust their discernment, their voice, and getting counsel and soundboarding, brainstorming ideas is a part of getting good counsel and wisdom. But learning to discern and to trust. So you had to trust when you go up in those, with weight. There's a bit of like, can I do this?
Yeah.
And learning, that's one of the things is being athletes ourselves. We're always like, ooh, what's the next challenge? What can I? And I'll never forget when I ran my first and only marathon. So let's just make that clear. And it was way back in my 20s.
You did it, girl.
But I just wanted to see, could I do it? I used to think people were crazy who ran that many miles. And then as I did it and I grew in my own tolerance and resiliency and got to eat lots of pancakes and thought that was a bonus in all the running. And then I ran the marathon with my cheerleading team, my friends and you, Jeff, and was like, I can do hard things. That was a marker that built some trust, not only in my community that was cheering me on and in God who was with me, but in myself, that I can do hard things. So this is a dynamic of healthy relationships. In healthy relationships, it's just not about, do you trust me? But it's me letting you also have a voice, is what we said, but trusting the discernment that you have from the Lord, or what you think, or what you think you're going to do. And as parents of teenagers, that's a lot of what we're doing, is helping them to have choices before them and to build trust in their discernment making, rather than telling them what to do. They're at that age now where they're practicing those muscles. And it'll get harder and harder when they're out on their own, and they're responsible for a lot more. But for now, we're here in the back, just like God is for us. Okay.
You just got me with another one. This is happening like multiple times where it's like something you said just hits me with another side angle here. Talking about trusting yourself. This is such if you're a parent out there, you might, you might be leading a company and you might be also a parent. So this is awesome. Integration is the key here. Mm-hmm. There's a biblical principle that we teach on often about how to help kids understand who they are and their wiring so that they can trust who they are and before they're launched.
That God made them on purpose.
And we're getting ready to launch a senior into this world. And that's exciting and heartbreaking at the same time. But the principle is coming from the scriptures, train a child up in the way they should go. And when they're old, they won't depart from it. Maybe you've heard that proverb before, if you will, that phrase. Well, actually, as you get into the ancient language and in the Hebrew, you did some deep diving on this. The Hebrew is speaking to bent. And that is like wiring for us, our language of use of this bent. Parents, this is so powerful. When you having the most power in your kids' lives and as early as possible, you know, as they're big persons in their lives, as early as possible, notice as any good parent does, trying to figure out who are you and notice who they are as much as possible. And with your words and with the influence and the power that you hold, speak into life who you notice your child to be, their bent, their wiring. And if you do this with consistency, lots of reps, it's been the habit of the environment of your home to, not that you do this perfectly, nobody does, but just that overarching, you have been an affirmer and a noticer of who your kids have been, and you are drawing that out and reminding them. And as teenagers, we got to remind them a little bit more. Right now, then they are less likely to forget who they are when they leave. That's the thing. It's not an inevitability. It's not a guarantee that they're going to have a secure identity their whole lives, but they're less likely to depart from it. That's just such a cool thing that God has revealed to all of us through his word. What a powerful thing. And even outside of the parenting relationship, as a leader, I work and you work also all the time with leaders who are executives in their companies. We're teaching them to see their people and to notice and affirm and to build up and to be attuned to their wiring. Why? Because it's good to do that, but also it impacts every metric that they care about. You take care of your people, you're going to have better products and services, and you're going to have It's inevitable in that way. So
how is that connected to trust again? I got lost there at the end.
Well, as you begin to do and see your people and you build into them, they will trust themselves wiring. We use the kids analogy, trusting in themselves, having a secure identity and confidence in that. Yeah. As a leader in organizations, you absolutely build trust when you see people accurately, notice them, put them in positions that they're wired to flourish and how they were bent. Yeah. And you're attuned to them. They want to build trust with you. Those are healthy steps.
Great. Okay, cool. So let me just say on the extreme side, I don't want to say extreme. It's actually a lot of people's reality. So I don't mean extreme. I just mean on the flip side, which is really toxic or unhealthy or even abusive relationships. Okay. That is the number one thing that gets destroyed is our trust meter and our ability to trust our own discernment. Because of the ambivalence that happens in abusive dynamics where you feel for someone, love someone, and also hate them or have good and positive negative emotions towards somebody. And in abuse or toxic relationships, we're told what we think, what we feel, what we want, what we need, and our bodies, our mind, our whole sense of being don't matter. What matters is either the system, the church, the organization, the family matters more, or that person's needs, wants, desires.
The abuser's needs, wants.
And so we become void, and we start to, oftentimes, especially when it's supposed to be a trusted relationship, like a spouse, a parent, a pastor, a boss who says he's a follower of Jesus,
a coach,
people of power in relationship. It's supposed to be a trusted relationship, and it's not. A lot of us will question ourselves instead of going, that person's not a trustworthy person. We go, something's wrong with me because I dated that person, or I married that person, or that's my mom, or that's my grandpa. It gets so confusing. And so I just want to bring that into the room when we talk about trust. That's good. A lot of people have had such violations. And I would say even in our own stories, that's happened before, and we've worked through a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But that recent situation in the last 3 years, I did a lot of questioning. I'm like, we just published the book, Shrinking the Integrity Gap Between What Leaders Preach and Live. Like, we know how to discern. We have good smellers towards what is healthy and unhealthy, who's trustworthy, who's not trustworthy. And we still entered into a relationship with wisdom and prayer and conversation and counsel. And that is the reality of living in a fallen world. And so I just want to say that truth, that we can't avoid hurt for coming from broken relationships, okay, but we can avoid more than not, because I do think there is bad counsel that says, give everybody a chance until they prove you, you know, wrong. And I'm going, well, let's do it a different way. Let's actually go slow and steady in an interview process with an organization, mm-hmm, in a dating relationship. Mm-hmm. There's in a church, if you're looking for a church, go slow. I would say that everybody looks back on something and goes, I wish we would have gone slower. I don't think I've heard anybody says, I wish we would have done that faster. And so there's just some good wisdom in being able to take time. So if you doubt yourself, this is why we're speaking about trust, being able to discern what it is that you think, what you feel, what matters to you, bounce it off of scripture. It needs to align with scripture. So if I'm like, hey, I think it's okay to punch Jeff in the face, like, that really is not what we're talking about. Okay. So I just hope that nobody's taking me that way. What we're really just talking about is growing your own discernment muscles, your trust muscles, to be able to stay in a relationship or walk away from a relationship based on levels of trust. And it takes some time. So if somebody breaks trust, this is what happened in on this relationship with us. They break trust. They don't do what they say they're going to do. You talk to them about it and you see what they do. And oftentimes an untrustworthy person is going to make excuses, blame, defend, gaslight, tell you this was your fault, you misunderstood, all the things that end up going in a circle and make people feel crazy. That is an unhealthy response, and often will say, siren, 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 not trustworthy. So when I'm going back to the little fifth grade girl, what I'm teaching her is to say how people handle feedback when they do something that doesn't match what they say is a tell sign of whether they're going to be a trustworthy person that you want to bring closer into your circle. And so that's another reason why you need some time, is conflict is going to have to happen before trust is really built. I have a lot more to say about that, but I'll pass the baton here and make sure you get a word in about that before I shift.
No, I just am thinking, as you're sharing here about the principle that you like to utilize on green light, yellow light, red light, mm-hmm, and then how that framework can really help here. You know, when we talk about green light, think of a traffic lights symbol, right? So green light people in relationships are those that that are proven to be trustworthy people. They mm-hmm say what they mean and they do what they say generally. They're not perfect, but they mm-hmm they have a consistency over time where you've observed and engaged with them, and they let you be they don't take over the relationships or the conversations all the time. There's equity in this dynamic. There's safety. And when something happens where there's a mess up, you could go to them and say, hey, this happened and I felt this way. You made me feel this way. And a green light person is going to be attuned to that, go, oh my goodness, work hard to try to see from the other person's perspective and try to repair. It'd be a green light person. What's a yellow light person?
Well, before we go to that, they are going to have bad days and they might have a hard season. Mm-hmm. So green light people, generally, if you're trustworthy, you guys are going to work through those seasons, but mm-hmm you do work to repair. So there's still a lot of humanity that's in the green light. And I say that because a lot of times people will be like, see, I knew you're going to disappoint me, and they're out. And that's where you're putting a green light person over here in a red light. So did that make sense? But I feel like I need to clarify that, because that's a conversation I have with a lot of people who've had a lot of hurt in their life. And if you've had a lot of hurt, mm-hmm, you're going to be cautious with green light people. So just know that it's going to take some time to have many green light people in your life before you start to really feel like, okay, there are people who are trustworthy.
They exist.
But then you might be a person who's had lots of green light people and you're like, I don't even know what a red light person looks like. So let's talk about the yellow light.
Okay.
These are the wishy-washy. The Bible calls them foolish. Maybe they want to do the right thing, but they maybe don't don't know what the right thing is. They lack boundaries. They lack understanding. So it can really be a lot of us where we're just unaware of how we impact others.
They don't do what they say a lot.
Well, they might sometimes, and sometimes they don't. That's why they're wishy-washy. They're hot and cold. Okay. Sometimes they're spot on, and then other times they're not. And you're going, I'm confused. They're very confusing. And when you do confront them and say, ouch, that hurt, or that didn't feel good, or I feel like you're crossing my boundary, the yellow light person really does often feel remorse. They feel really bad and they want to do what's right, but you're not going to see long-term change. They just go right back to what they want to do because they're really only aware of their own sense of way in the world. So a lot of what Jeff and I are doing and our team at Living Wholehearted is helping a lot of yellow light people become green light people, helping with awareness, knowing how your story impacts you. What are your triggers and how do you respond? Knowing your wiring, do you know their impact on others and can you receive from others? So the good news is we can shift back and forth, but I would just say the yellow light person is just someone who's just not aware and has maybe never had a healthy relationship, doesn't know how to do conflict.
Maybe it wasn't modeled to them,
right? Yeah. And so there's a lot of grace for yellow light, but we have higher boundaries. We don't offer our pearls to swine, what the Bible says. Jesus said this, meaning like you want to be thoughtful about your heart and your wisdom and your most important parts of who you are. Be thoughtful who you give those to. And so yellow light people we're more careful with. And then there's red light people.
Yeah. And even as we just described this, it's important to know that we're not labeling people like, and it's just a way of meeting your needs at the expense of others. This is just a framework of wisdom, right? So just take it as a framework of wisdom as you think about people, and you're even teaching others to think about people. Mm-hmm. Red light people are those that actually are the kinds of people that want to use others to get their needs met in an unhealthy way. They're doing it on purpose. They have a habit of it. Mm-hmm. They're not safe. When you see consistently over time, red light people using their voice to dominate yours or others, and it's about them and it's about what they want. They can even be really good and crafty at presenting like a green light person. But over time, Jesus said it really great, you know, judge a tree by its fruit. So that means you got to kind of watch. Fruit takes time to grow, mm-hmm. and then to drop. And so you're looking and to observe. Red light people they don't care about your boundaries. Again, they care about what they want, mm-hmm. and they want to use you to get what they want. And so those are some things that come to my mind.
Yeah.
And you
something
stay clear.
Simple I will notice when I meet people is how quickly they share about themselves. Now, there's a little disclaimer. I am a licensed marriage family therapist. And if people know that, they tend to want to share more or not share at all, right?
That's
like
true.
The extremes. But in general, you can tell like in a small group setting, first time meeting somebody, the oversharer, so talking to all of you who've either been in a situation or you do this, is a sign of not discerning and your trust meter being a little bit off and broken. Like you want to be thoughtful about who is with you. And again, if you're meeting someone, no matter what their title is, taking your time to share who you are is wise. Now, never sharing who you are with somebody that's a green light person who has shown you over time they are who they say they are. That's another broken meter that says, I will never trust another person again because I've been hurt too many times and probably by somebody that really meant a lot to you or was supposed to be a really trusted person. And that takes a lot longer and you have to be gracious and grace-filled for yourself and advocate to say, I just need time. But to stay never trusting God, never trusting others, and only trusting yourself is a really unhealthy place to stay too. And so these two extremes are really helpful just for us as we're growing in this place. And if I want to overshare, I share a lot. I'm very open about who I am, but it's different in that I share what I've already processed with the Lord and with my safe people and have healed from. Vulnerable. Like I'm able, if I'm in the middle of something right here, right now, I'm not doing that just with anybody. I'm doing that with my green light community. That's really a small circle. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important word for particularly leaders who are trying to be vulnerable, trusted leaders. But sometimes we're taught to just share everything right out. And I go, the public is not your besties. And you don't, it's a mixed bag of red light, green light, yellow light people. And Jesus didn't even do that. So if Jesus didn't do it, then we want to be willing to follow in his footsteps and wisdom.
Just, it's a good thing to aspire to grow, mm-hmm. to be a green light person, right? If you will, to be and again, not to label anybody, but to be that kind of a person that is available to, knows how to regulate their own needs, you know, and is actually available to see others and to be a listener, to help others, rather than using others all the time to get their needs met in unhealthy ways. And if you're in a yellow, kind of in the yellow zone, you feel like, oh my gosh, I do some of that. I do that. You know, I overshare, or I have empathy really quickly for people, but then I tend to not really follow through and
become besties with everyone. Yeah,
be encouraged. There's room to grow. Welcome to the human race. You know, with the right motive, we can build this, these methods and grow and develop and mature. And sometimes you can go from green to back to yellow. I mean, and that can happen too. Our pain can take us into dark places,
trauma.
Other situations and trauma. And so this is just broad brushstrokes as a frame to help us to continue to grow and to in our awareness of our own needs and awareness of others and how we impact each other. Mm-hmm. And that's a journey. That's a journey over a lifetime that's worthy to take.
Yeah. So I'm just going to end with a lighter story and then you can close this up. But I was thinking about wisdom I've passed on to my daughters, and I often teach in Courageous Girls and with my coaching clients. But I'll say, like, if somebody says, trust me, and you barely know them, don't trust them. And so we'd always say that to, like, our girls of being, you know, and so anytime someone would say, trust me, and they'd look at me with big eyes. But we were ziplining one time in Hawaii. We've not been to Hawaii. I haven't been to Hawaii many times, but we took our girls one time and then went for an anniversary. And so we went ziplining with the girls, and they're going across loving it. But Nevaeh, our youngest, is loving it way too much. And she is like supermanning it and ended up slowing it down. And they got stopped and didn't make it all the way. So the zip line instructor guide had to, you know, shimmy out there to get them. And he puts his hand out and he's like, do you trust me? And the girls are in this dilemma, right? They're like hanging out over thousands of feet high. I'm exaggerating. But they're going, okay, mom says don't trust anyone who says, do you trust me? But they had to grab his hand in order to get back to safety.
Addie may have said, no, I don't. But what do we do?
Yeah, I think she didn't say, no, I don't. But he goes, grab my hand. Yeah. But that idea of like, it's not clean cut. And right. So sometimes people will take things that we're saying and misapply them. And in that situation, I was told her, I said, I was really glad you listened to your gut and you grabbed his hand. Otherwise, you'd still be sitting out there. Yes. But there's a risk. That's my bottom point, is there's always a risk when we give people our trust. And we just want to be thoughtful about when we do that and really gracious with ourselves when we've given our trust and it's been violated and it's not because we messed up and went too fast. I think I want to be careful to make sure we're not blaming ourselves when people take advantage of trust. And I love that Jeff's always pointing us back to say, are we trustworthy people? That's really kind of the most control we have, mm-hmm. is really about ourselves. So if you're in a relationship, particularly thinking about a marriage where you're like, I don't trust my spouse, start by being trustworthy yourself and grow there. And then maybe being able to talk a little bit more with your spouse, with somebody who can help you guys build and restore trust. If you're in a workspace where you're like, I'm not in a trustworthy, you need to start thinking about, have you been a trustworthy person? Can you be a trustworthy person who can change that system? If not, if it's going to make you sick and more toxic, then get out. Like, those are kind of the discernment levels. And
you might need to.
Yeah, I might be jumping the gun, but always receiving some counsel, being able to process with somebody who is a green light person, who's going to let you be where you're at, but also maybe help you take some steps of courage. And I'll end there.
Yeah. I mean, in these situations, it takes work and effort. So it's not just a quick cut, a cutoff or a cancellation of a person or this. I mean, you got to do the work. But as you do the work, as you're observing behaviors over time, such a good point to keep your eyes open, your ears open, and to discern, you know, integrating all the things that we talked about, our bodies, our feelings, our mind and our intellect, using critical thinking and observing behavior, and does the audio match the video? All these things all work together, and they are not mutually exclusive of how God made us. I mean, we are integrated beings. Yeah. So if you, you can have some hope here. You can continue. No one's stopping you from being able to continue to grow in your ability to be a trustworthy person. That's a wonderful way to start. And then to look at the relationships around you, and to evaluate them with wisdom and to respond in wisdom. We hope this encourages you today.
Yeah. And so until next time, we hope that you'll continue to grow to be a trustworthy leader in your home and in your work and your community. And if you need some help, go to livingwholehearted.com. We've got a lot of resources for you. We're available. We've got an amazing professional counseling team. Particularly, we love coming alongside leaders in our cohorts. So check it out, livingwholehearted.com. You can also follow us on social media. I'm at Tara Mattson. Jeff is not on social media, so you can't follow him. But you can follow livingwholehearted_whole at social. What is social media? Instagram. It's like on social media.
Say that one more time. The living wholehearted part.
You can follow us at living_wholehearted on Instagram. Thank you for being with us. And until next time, continue growing into the leader you would follow.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we've designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.